Hello, I'm Mark Coles. You're listening to Attacak and the Crate Diggers, an odyssey across three different continents to try to find one man's musical obsession.
Hello.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning.
This is Brian. I'm visiting from California. It's kind of random, but I'm looking for a Ghanaian musician who's based in Toronto, or who I think is based in Toronto. And I was just curious if I could ask you a question about him.
About who?
His name is Attacak.
About who?
The musician. His name is Attacak. K-A-K.
Attacak.
Ever heard of him?
No, I don't know.
Nobody's ever heard of him, and nobody knows him.
Meet Brian Shimkovitz, a man on a mission, a blogger and DJ originally from Chicago in the United States, and this is his obsession. A 1990s cassette tape by a Ghanaian musician called Attacak. The album is called Obasima.
So here's the Attacak cassette entitled Obasima. I always love the font, the way that it's kind of doubled up in these big block letters. You got a picture of a guy with the sunglasses, screaming, singing, the backwards cap, awesome jean jacket.
Brian bought the cassette from a market stall in Cape Coast in Ghana back in 2002.
It's funny, I completely remember buying it from a guy with kind of a portable wheelbarrow-like stand on the street, but I don't think I really listened to it for a long, long time. Pretty sure not until I arrived in New York years later.
Listening to it then, Brian was so struck by what he heard, it inspired him to start an online blog called Awesome Tapes from Africa, where he posts music from a stash of cassette tapes he's found or been sent from right across the African continent. And he's been searching for Attacak ever since.
So it was in 2004 that I fell in love with this cassette, and it was at that point, very soon after, that I started dialing the phone numbers on the inside of the cassette. They led to nobody in Toronto, just Russian-speaking people that I couldn't communicate with. That's when I started to actually cold call people via Skype in Ghana. Anybody I could kind of figure out that had some relationship, maybe a similar name, I could find on like a website. When I noticed the university in Kumasi where the cassette cover was designed, that was the guy who told me go to Hamburg. So I said, okay, let me book a show in Hamburg. Stayed there for 3 or 4 days, searching all over the place on a bicycle, going to every single Ghanaian shop I could find. Nobody knew this tape. Fast forward even further, getting more calls and emails over the years, people coming up to me at shows saying, who is this guy? This is so inspiring. You know, seeing people all over the blogosphere and in magazines writing about Attacak, thinking, man, this is really a phenomenon. Who is this guy? The longer it takes to find him, the fewer clues I have, the deeper the mystery is, and the greater my obsession.
Fast forward 9 years. It's now January 2014, and Brian is in Toronto, Canada.
It feels like a pretty random part of Toronto. So we're looking for Attacak clues at various African music shops.
You know that he lives in Toronto here?
Not for sure, but he has been in Toronto. But I went to Hamburg. The people in Kumasi told me to go to Hamburg.
Brian isn't the only one currently seeking to unearth rare, obscure, or long-forgotten music from across Africa, hoping to give it a new lease of life. I present a weekly world music show from the shed at the bottom of my garden, and a fair chunk of what I play each week comes from compilations and reissue records made by a small group of dedicated bloggers, DJs, and record labels, loosely known as the Crate Diggers.
Hey, I want Chazai.
Usually from the West, these men, and they do tend to be men, are passionate about finding and extracting sounds from piles of long-forgotten records left to gather dust right across the African continent and beyond. Labels like Analog Africa, Strut Records, Luaka Bop and Soundwave have put out compilations of everything from Kenyan disco and Ivory Coast pop to Burkinabe soul and Nigerian rock and roll. Yeah. Often, it's music from the 60s, 70s and 80s that combines African styles with more than a dash of James Brown. There was even one compilation, African Scream Contest, Raw and Psychedelic Sounds from 70s Benin and Togo. Yes, the titles are always ridiculously long, which feature a series of African James Brown impersonators. It didn't half make you want to dance, though. I met Miles Claret, founder of Soundway Records and a leading crate digger himself.
For me, it was almost just about trying to find things that I'd never heard before. So I went to Ghana a few times about 10 years ago and started knocking on people's doors and getting telephone numbers, getting on buses, going all around the country, finding record producers, musicians, distributors, DJs, and yeah, really trying to get under the skin of what was happening when I was 1 year old, you know, and trying to find records that had somehow fallen between the cracks, somehow ahead of their time or commercially unsuccessful. And so that was kind of my mission with those records, was to try and find as many of these records as possible.
For some music fans, what the crate diggers are doing can be a tad too out there for their liking. Then came Brian and his blog, which takes things to another realm altogether. Lo-fi synths, high-pitched, manic, cartoon-like vocals and rapping in dialect about what sounds like Scooby-Doo at one stage. Atakak, an unknown Ghanaian recording in Canada in the early 90s, clearly not going to be everybody's musical cup of tea.
I have never heard anything like this from Ghana. I mean, it's a mixture of hip life, which is sort of their local rap music, and high life, which is the long-running pop music in Ghana. But then an entirely different factor of sort of lo-fi electronic beats that kind of reminded me of early house music from Chicago. I was like, man, people are gonna totally dig this.
It's raw and left field, and as you can tell, very, very different. Unlikely to trouble the pop charts, I suspect. You can rest easy, Miley Cyrus and Justin Bieber. But here in my radio shed, where I play all sorts of unusual stuff from all around the planet, everything from Mongolian throat singers to Burmese gamelan orchestra covers of Bob Dylan, we tend to like and champion this sort of thing. Brian absolutely loves it, and he's determined to find the man who made it, a man who, so far, remains a total, utter mystery.
I'm going to make posters to have a friend in Ghana post around town and say, you know, $300 US reward if you can find this person. And I'm gonna give my friend like a bonus of extra money if he finds somebody who can find information about Atakak. This guy has to exist. He was a real person, is a real person. Like, it's just becoming so strange.
African drums, arts and crafts. We're coming in here. Oh. Thank you. Oh, hey, good morning.
Hi.
Incense, traditional Ghanaian stools, drum skins, hot plate.
Sekou, it sounds like from your name you're not from Ghana.
From Gambia.
Oh, okay, cool. But the reason why I came from California today is because I'm looking for this musician from Ghana.
Hold on, I'll come find out for you. Somebody's in here. Hello, hi. You know this musician from Ghana, Atta. A-T-A-K-K. Yeah, there's a gentleman here.
Hi, how are you? I'm sorry, this is Brian. Yeah, because I love his music a lot, and I think that he was never famous. But
someone who might call himself an amateur crate digger, or at least he was when he was in Paris in the 1980s, is Andy Morgan, writer, journalist, and former manager of one of world music's biggest selling acts, the Tuareg group Tanarawin.
What do you make of the crate digging phenomenon that seems to have taken hold the last 10 years? The going back, a lot of work goes into that, a lot of dedication. What do you think motivates people to do that?
I think it's a mix between altruism, friendship. You know, you become very intense friends with the people that you're working with. But I think there's also elements of ego in there. You know, I want these guys to be a success. And if they're a success, I'll be a success. And if we can earn money out of it, my God, you know, what an amazing achievement that would be, you know. And so I think all that's a motivation. It becomes a game. It becomes a battle, like betting on the horses or playing the stock market or something. Although, you know, slightly more spiritual maybe than those things, you know. But it's like that. You get very, very caught up in it.
If Brian's search for Attacak does eventually come up trumps, what does he actually want to achieve?
I would love to sit down with him with a computer and Google his name and show him how many people all over the world for so many years now are so excited about this music and is so inspired and so into it. I would love to show him like a YouTube video of kids in a club in Berlin dancing to these songs. And then I'd like to try to find a way to reissue it on vinyl, because that's what all these people are asking me for. So many people would love to have a cleaned up version of it on wax. You know, he could probably make some money off of it.
Brian has already made the music from Attacak's cassette available to listen to on his Awesome Tapes from Africa blog. But to take his obsession with this album further and actually release it for purchase, he needs to find Attacak. As a crate digger, you can't just go to Africa, press rewind, find a selection of long-lost vinyl and cassettes, choose your favourites, and release a collection called Legends of Benin, Afro Rock Volume 1, or Guitars from Agadez to hopefully enthusiastic new audiences without an awful lot of legwork. To do it legitimately, not to mention ethically, in its simplest form, you've got to find the artists so you can get their permission and pay them their dues. And as Brian is discovering, that's easier said than done.
Yeah, I was surprised one day in the house when a white man showed up, you know, this young boy, and said, can I talk to you, Ebo? And I said, yeah, you're welcome. We sat down and he requested to put my songs on his compilation.
One of the big success stories of the whole crate-digging phenomenon has been Ghana's Ebo Taylor, a high-life musician from the 1950s who made the jump from relative obscurity to international success in his seventh decade.
So he took the stuff away, and before I knew, he had put it on compilation. He paid me well, and you know, there was no distress. Later on, I heard some of the songs on the compilation being played by bands in Europe. I was so pleased, you know, when a band came to Ghana and played some of my songs. And I think my Claret gave me the exposure. It was a rebirth.
Ebo's music first reappeared on Ghana Sounds, Miles Claret's debut Soundway compilation.
If my Claret had not come for my music, but I've been dead by now, I think so, out of true poverty. Or my Claret, as a matter of fact, is a hero. You know, when I think of, you know, those days that he came to Africa, came to Ghana, and was searching for, you know, old stuff, you know, to present to the world, that was magnificent.
You really feel it made that big an impact?
Yes, it did. It did not only expose Ebo Taylor, it also exposed the Ghanaian music. You know, people will take it seriously, you know, coming from Ghana now.
That must be one of the real joys of what you've done, the success stories, the musicians whose records you take and then put on collections and something good comes of it. He says he couldn't believe you gave him some money.
Well, it's really nice that he said something like that, and it is really nice to have been able to help people out in that way. It doesn't always work out as well as that, and you hope to do your best. On the flip side, some people have been big stars 30 years ago, and they used to sell hundreds of thousands of records, and with all the will in the world, the compilations that we put out don't sell anything like in those numbers, and so sometimes people are a bit confused as to why you'd license a track or find an artist when you're only selling, you know, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000 copies of a record. And I always just try and tell people that there's an interest in this music. How are you ever going to get a career back if you don't take the risk and put it out there?
In Toronto, tired of the name Attacak drawing blank faces from those in the Ghanaian community, Brian is busy trying to track down the other names listed on the credits of his well-worn cassette.
We spoke earlier today with a nice
lady running the shop named Ata Penny, and I told her that I would stop by or call later, so here I am stopping by.
Okay.
Know anybody I can ask?
For this name?
It's a weird name. Right?
Yeah, Ata.
Hello, sir.
Ata.
How are you?
Good, good.
I'm Brian. Brian,
fine. So this is an old-time cassette.
Yeah, it's old-time cassette.
Yeah.
And it's high-life, hip-life combination. Combined. It's a really interesting recording.
Yeah, let me see. It was Ata Keiki.
Yeah, it's Toronto. A strange name.
Oh, Nyansin, I know Nyansin, Nyantechi. He's now in Ghana. They have a band called Opambo Band. They even did so many recordings. And I know some of the bandsmen, and there's another. You have his number. So when you call him, he may know at all, because that time the band where they were living at the basement of my sister.
Alex,
yeah.
Do you have any idea how many times I've called people, looked everywhere? I went to every Ghanaian shop in Hamburg.
Yeah.
I've been everywhere. This is unbelievable.
They're
basically saying we're looking for this musician, and he's friends with this guy who's friends with that guy, and we want to ask this guy so we can talk to that guy and show him the tape. Various people have all moved back to Ghana, so it makes it a little bit more complicated, but communication's happening, connections are being made. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going on right now.
After years of false starts and red herrings, Brian is having a sudden turn of luck. Not one, but two leads in a single day. The second, courtesy of us.
So we just got an email from Rebecca, the producer at the BBC in London.
I was in London having a look online for references to Atakak when I found a Facebook tribute page. And there, someone had actually written, "Atakak is my dad."
This is a real, genuine thing. I mean, this might be the most solid lead so far.
He was called Jeff Gowdy and he lived in Toronto. So we sent an email to Brian, who was en route to yet another Ghanaian store.
You're really excited about this?
Yeah, I'm super excited. It's very possible that this young guy who we've just located on Facebook in Toronto is the son of Ata Kak, the one and only.
Brian wants to meet Jeff Gowdy, Yao's son in Toronto, in his words, to try to reassure him he's not some crazy person.
Brian, nice
he needn't have worried. Even Jeff admits he was surprised when he first came across his father's music on YouTube.
Yeah, because I already knew he did music, but like I never knew like it was on the internet. You know, until one day I just typed in his name and saw a couple of videos. You know, he has a couple of views too. I'm like, whoa, this really my dad? Yeah. Like I went and I typed in his name on Facebook and I saw his fan page. Yeah. And some guy was like, "Where is he now?" I commented and said, "I'm his son. And Ata Kak is in Ghana right now."
Of all the people, it's like your dad has 500 likes on Facebook.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, you know?
So, after 7 years, spending thousands of dollars following hundreds of false leads and dead ends, Brian is about to call Ata Kak. He's actually called Yao Ata Yuju. Brian is in Toronto. Yao is in Kumasi, Ghana.
Hello.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you? You don't know me, but I got your number yesterday from your son, Jeff, in Toronto.
Oh, yeah.
My name's Brian. I'm an American guy, and I'm a huge, huge fan of your music. And I've been looking around for you since about 2006. This is the artist who goes by Ata Kak, correct?
Yep.
Mr. Yao Ata Owusu?
Exactly.
I go around the world DJing different kinds of music from across Africa, all from cassettes. Mm-hmm. And I can be playing at a party in Australia or New York or Amsterdam, and people will come up to me and say, I don't know what to say. The trip was a huge success. The trip accomplished what I hoped it would accomplish. I didn't go into it knowing for sure, but I had this weird instinctual feeling that this was the place where I was going to find either Ata Kak or his family.
Thank you very much, Ryan.
I don't really have any words, to be honest, because I'm just very, very happy that I was able to end this long, long, obsessive mission. And now, even cooler, he sounds like he's down to, you know, do the reissue, which I think a lot of people out there want.
Okay, bye-bye. Boom. Awesome.
So who is the mysterious Attacak? The guy behind the excited shrieks and 90s beats with his online fan base of underground clubbers and African music obscurists.
I see you my day-day.
Well, he lives far from the centre of things, a four-hour drive from the capital, Accra, in a house with no electricity. Sounds a bit like my shed. Yeah, are you there? Greetings.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
How does it feel? This must be slightly strange. Has this all come as a bit of a surprise to you, this interest in your work?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, it's very interesting, because I wasn't expecting this. But I'm loving it. Anyway.
You're loving it?
Oh, sure, I do.
As Brian found out, Yao used to play in highlife bands in Toronto as the drummer and vocalist. But he had a hankering to make a different kind of music. He was listening to hip-hop, Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. It was the early 90s, after all. So he set up his own recording studio in his flat, bought a synthesizer, microphones and a reel-to-reel tape machine at great expense, enlisted some backing singers, and within 3 months, he'd recorded his album.
I sent it to my brother in Ghana to market it for me because it was in our local language. I thought it was that probably it could sell more in Ghana than it would in Canada. But no, I was wrong.
It flopped, did it?
It flopped. I was very much disappointed. I spent all my money on the musical instruments and other things other stuff that I bought. And I had to pay the background vocalist. And I didn't earn anything out of it, so I was a little bit disappointed. But I was very eager and determined that I could make it somehow. But I didn't have the means to do it.
When you were sat in that home studio in Toronto in the 1990s, experimenting, you say, doing something really different, mixing high life and reggae and all sorts of things, could you ever, in your wildest imagination, think it would end up like this?
No, not at all. I thought, because I was into something unique or something different, it might take me somewhere, but not in this. This is mind-boggling. It's just mind-boggling.
I was looking on the internet last night, and I came across a page that said, the coolest person since Prince, and then had your photo next to it.
Really?
Yep.
Wow!
How does that make you feel, then?
Okay, I feel honored. You know, I feel honored.
A couple of months after Brian had found Yao, or Attacak, I spoke to him in Los Angeles, where he's now in the midst of tracking down a clean enough copy of the original Obasima tape so that he can make a remastered version for release later this year. Rather worryingly, those chipmunk-style vocals aren't quite what they seemed. Brian's tape has apparently been playing at slightly the wrong speed for the past 7 years. As for his deal with Attacak, well, after paying him a small advance, they'll split the profits 50-50. Miles Claret from Soundway Records. You're the leading guy. What are the pitfalls that he might have to watch out for? What's he going to have to be careful about?
The pitfalls are trying to make it work commercially, trying to get everyone paid, trying to raise the profile of these people and do it in a way that works and somehow keep the ship afloat.
Well, I think what's beautiful about the music world today is that you have the people who headline Glastonbury, and then you have the people that headline small tiny basements in Nebraska, and all of these people can have a career in their own way.
Is it the inner urge in all of us to get that music out there, to create a level playing field? I present a homemade lo-fi radio program from the shed at the bottom of my garden, which I assume is probably the sort of radio equivalent of what you're doing with your blog in your apartment.
Yes, very much so. Duct taped together. I don't know. I mean, it's like, I don't want to come across as somebody who's like, oh, well, I'm some ambassador for African music, or if I'm like saving the music, quote unquote, or anything like that. It's more just, there's a billion dudes and ladies out there who are obsessed with different types of art or creative movements, and this is just my kind of way of celebrating it, I guess.
Right, back inside my radio shed, sat in the corner, squashed in between the children's bikes, a garden hose and some slug pellets, I think it's time to introduce Attacak to the rest of the world. Or at least the dedicated few who tune into my Shedcast each week. You're listening to The Shed. My apologies for the extra percussion you heard on that last track. A timely intervention from a squirrel running over the shed roof, I'm afraid. It made a right racket. We've got a very special record from Ghana for you now, a man called Attacak. I'm actually in the midst of making a documentary about him for proper radio. BBC World Service, no less. No squirrels in their studios. The album's called Obasima, and from it this is the title track. Absolutely marvellous. Has it sunk in yet? Does it feel real?
Yes, how shall I put it? I love it. I'm loving every bit of it. Because when I had a call from London, BBC. BBC, you know, interview me, I said, wow, is this me? It's unbelievable. You know, nobody knows me in the country in the first place, in the musical world. And all of a sudden, I'm getting some calls from BBC in regards to the songs. So, I'm loving everything. And moreover, somebody had to come all the way from Accra to Kumasi, where I am now, to interview me. And you are doing the same thing. I'm already a star. It's amazing. Yeah.
Attacak and the Crate Diggers was presented by me, Mark Coles, and produced by Rebecca Maxted and Eva Krysiak. It was a Wise Buddha production for the BBC World Service. The BBC.